All right, everybody, we're back here at the Know Your Place podcast. I'm Charles Altendorf, and this is episode 72. And today we're going to talk about a town that was, if I'm correctly. I'm joined here by my friend Rick. Say hi to the fans, Rick.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
And so I kind of covered this once in one of my other episodes, but there's a lot of places in America that have just, that have been kind of abandoned. I talked once about Centralia, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you have you heard of that one, Rick? That was
No.
the that's the town with the garbage dump on fire underneath
Okay, yeah, I did.
it.
I have seen that, yeah.
But what a lot of people don't know is that's actually not the normal situation how cities get abandoned. And a lot of what's happened over the years in America is we claim to be the land of the free and the land of the right to. Yeah, it's interesting. The original phrase was supposed to be life, liberty, and property, and it turned into life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And as I've been involved in different levels of government and studying urban planning, I've learned that eminent domain has been a very aggressive thing done in America throughout the history. So today, I thought I would bring on my friend Rick, who he in some ways is. I don't know what the proper way to put this. A child of eminent domain. But he's from a neighborhood that no longer exists. Well, he lived a little there for a little bit. So, what's that neighborhood called, Rick? And
It's Highland Park.
when did you live there, Rick?
I was about 5 years old, so that's been 35 years ago.
And this neighborhood was originally it's now part of the Louisville Airport. I guess is the most proper way to say what's happened to it, but it's really wild. So I was reading up on this a bit, and Rick can expand on this too. But apparently, it used to be its own city back in the day when the railroad. It originally was a railroad town, is what I ventured to guess from it, and it was its own city up until the 30s. And believe it or not, it wanted to be its own city still, and the city of Louisville somehow massaged it in the courts that they won the ability to annex it. That's really wild. Generally speaking, courts respect autonomies of cities against other cities, and you see there's other cities in Louisville that have preserved their autonomy, like St. Matthews or what's another few.
Jeffersonville, Shively.
Tons of others. Shively, you know.
Well, in particular in Louisville and Jefferson County, in order for to get it on the ballot to vote for merger, the cities had a they said we're not gonna go for this and get prove it to get on the ballot unless they got to keep their autonomy.
Right. And so I'm just shocked. I don't know what happened back in the 30s, but because the way they made it sound was like Louisville basically sued in court to get it in there, which I still can't figure out how that went down. There must have been something really shady happening. But this is the 30s in Kentucky, so I really it's
Kentucky, you got bourbon. Was that before? When was Prohibition?
that was right before, yeah,
Okay,
like 33.
so yeah, so you had Al Capone, all those people,
But yeah, so at the time when it merged, from the historical article I read, it says there were 330 families. And I think at some point they said the peak of the population of the neighborhood was at 12,000 at one point. So, that's all fine, well, and good. Maybe it got merged into the city, and you would think that means that it would get better services, be a better place, and this and that. Well, actually, that's not what happened, believe it or not. What ended up happening then was, I guess, in the late 90s.
Actually, kind of started in the all a lot of this actually started in the late 80s, actually.
As it eventually ended up getting annexed by the airport, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But so when you were growing up there, they were already trying to come in, and the airport was. Do you remember? I mean, you probably don't remember any of the arguments about it,
No, I
but
don't remember the arguments. I mean, I was just 5 years old at the time, so it wasn't. In my household, it wasn't discussed. So, but I'm pretty sure in some other houses, especially you, because you had a lot of small businesses, as I've read up on it, in that neighborhood, I'm pretty sure it was really discussed in among those people.
And I guess, do you have any sort of memories of what it was like living around there at the time?
It reminds me where it was a lower middle class, middle class, working class neighborhood. You had your local mom and pop, little store you go get, a bait shop and all those kind of things. It was just, I remember, riding my bike, it wasn't really off. You had Crittenden Drive nearby, but once you got inside the neighborhood, there wasn't really any major streets in there. So, you could, kids were riding their bikes everywhere. I mean, it was just a small town America, actually, in a way, even though it's in a bigger city.
And that's the thing that's sort of interesting about this place, is typically when we think of an eminent domain seizure, it usually puts in the press, all the time people talk about like gentrification, and generally they think of it as a they got rid of the poor type of ordeal. But in the particular instances of eminent domain, most of the ones I've seen are generally affect the working class people disproportionately, not those who are already in abject poverty. And that's it really is sort of like this mantra of the little guy being thrown out by the big guy, and in this particular instance, it seems what was on display here. And so during the 90s, of course, it wasn't, this is what's so weird, it doesn't look like it was dying in any way. Was it was perfectly occupied. There was no real justification, like, well, this place is abandoned, so let's go expand the airport into here.
No, I mean, and I hadn't lived there. I mean, I actually wasn't even living in Louisville at the time, but as I've researched and everything, yeah, I mean, you still had on the street corner, you still had your bait shops, you still had your mom and pop businesses there. So yeah, I mean, it was not Detroit, what you see up in Detroit. I mean, it was thriving. So, but it was, unfortunately, it was right next to the airport, and the airport wanted to make a power grab.
And I just can't reiterate how bizarre it is that the airport chose to do that. Because what ended up happening is the airport ended up expanding to the south anyway, where the land was more open anyway. And one of the, there's another city around there that's still technically incorporated that a popular, it's a small city in Kentucky right now. I forget the name offhand, but it's still technically incorporated, but there was only 7 people registered in the 2000 census, so I think at 2010, as of, or the 2010 census, so I think as of 2020 it will be defunct. But and there was more justification because that place was already losing people. There wasn't much left there. But in this particular case, they came out and basically struck a heart blow to a major area. So I guess we'll tell the people what it's like now. So I guess Highland Park did used to extend all the way to the what's the state fairgrounds now and all that. So right now it's Ricky can describe this a little more, but it's basically a major interchange, and then there's some streets under it, and none of it's really used by
No,
the
it's
airport.
not. You got the main road that go that went through the neighborhood. It's called Park Boulevard. And then on each side of it is you got fenced areas that's not being used by the airport. And actually, if you look at the aerials, you can see some, it's obviously been overgrown by weeds and grass, but you can see parts of the streets. It's really sad that that they took that over and then didn't do nothing with it. In fact, I think should give it back. In fact, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, and I can't reiterate this enough, and the other example I was going to talk about, is of course Pole Town Lives, and in Hamtramck, which is next to Detroit, they seized an old Polish neighborhood at the time. And there's a lot of rumors that they pulled types dirty tactics and everything to take this over for a factory that ended up going belly up 10 years later. And that's why I don't know how much you were exposed to eminent domain in your schooling, but that's why I really am not a fan of eminent domain. Because, I get that the original thought behind it, they originally brought it for the railroads. And back then, when you're putting in a railroad, generally you were running through just empty land. But when you start taking it into this modern times and you think that you're going to like buy up people's houses, especially in a dense area like Highland Park was, and somehow then repurpose that land, I don't think they really understand how much of an undertaking they are going through there.
Well, and another thing that is, I've reached up on the history, even before the airport, it was already starting to lose land because of the interstate,
Right,
264.
the interstate, and this is another thing that's really wild about it. So it got a double whammy. The interstate came through and cut it in half, and then the airport wanted to annex its land after the interstate came through and cut it in half, which I mean, I don't understand how the people at the time who were in charge of the government, I guess, I don't know, is there, I guess there is more outcry today when governments try to do that, but I mean, the people at the, you don't think that looks bad at all? Like,
Can I get political on here?
oh yes, absolutely.
Okay. You know whose baby that is to expand the Louisville Airport?
Oh, was it Mitch's?
Mitch McConnell's, yeah.
Oh,
I mean, he was old. I mean, obviously it was locally that done it, but I mean, he was, he had a big part of this as well.
and that's the other thing. It's always, that's the other thing it always comes back to. There's always some big name politician who promises all this prosperity from doing these type of projects, and very rarely is it ever realized.
Well,
Now,
and that's the thing. I mean, and UPS brought their Worldport in there, and it has prospered Louisville.
right.
But like Charles said, it went south of there. So
Right.
they took all that neighborhood right there and not used it. And it fathoms my mind. I don't understand.
Well, and it's particularly terrifying, right now you and I are both renting. We're not currently homeowners, but how terrifying is it if you're just a regular homeowner who's working hard to think that, hey, someday the government could just decide it wants my land and will make my life hard and will do anything to seize it. That is terrifying. And I personally think that they should, I don't know what they could do, but they're, I think these governments should be forced to pass a law that makes eminent domain illegal or makes a like a very defined set of rules under which it can be done.
Well, and then of course there's not any homes to that area, but you got what's going on in what LG&E is trying to do up there.
With that line, and that does affect people's property, and
Yeah.
that, they, and the other thing is, the other thing I always hear about eminent domain is, oh, well, they compensate people. They always weasel their way out of paying people their fair share every
Exactly.
time,
Yeah.
without fail, every time. I remember I met somebody when I was working in the grocery store in Bloomington, Indiana, and they seized their house to build the interstate. Because Bloomington was the largest city in America, not on an interstate. And they finally built an interstate to it. And they said they seized their house to build an interstate. And they said, now I'm in a house a third of the size of my house. And that was even under a Republican administration. That was under current Vice President Mike Pence's administration.
Not a shock there.
So, it's appalling, and I don't know. People should be held accountable for those type of actions, and it seems like they rarely are.
Well, it just really saddens me as a Louisville's my hometown. I haven't lived there since I was a kid, but to see a neighborhood that I once lived in that is it. I disagree with them in domain, but at least use the land, and it's not being used. That breaks my heart. That really breaks my heart because a lot of people lost their livelihoods, they lost their property because you had businesses there too,
Right.
and it was never used. And that breaks my heart.
Well, and I know I've said this before a few times, but and it also creates the, it really exacerbates the inequality problem in Louisville because these are your middle people. Those should be the people you're trying to help thrive in your city. You can't just have, yeah, okay, you can have some rich people, but the most they're ever going to make up of your population is probably like 10% of it. So you don't want to go making life hard for your average Joes.
Well, and it always goes back, to the money. You go to the East End of Louisville right now, the malls are dying across this country, and there's an was it Sears? But anyways, one of those big box stores that was anchored one of these malls, and they want to put in Topgolf.
Right, you told me about this,
And so you got, and of course, the rich people there, they're fighting them tooth and nail, and they actually might win. And but these people in Highland Park,
They got screwed and they all were forced to move out to the west end of Portland, which is good trek from there. I mean, 4 or 5 miles away. Sometimes I guess Valley Station's like 20.
because it's right near Hardin County line, so.
And it's unfair. Well, I guess we pretty much covered. Is there anything else you want to say, Rick, about your old neighborhood?
No, like I said, I don't remember much of it. I remember I do my brother-in-law, ex-brother-in-law, he lived there too, and actually he probably give a little bit more perspective than I did because he actually lived there a long time, so a lot longer than I did. But he talks about just all the great memories he had living there, and then when he okay, here's the thing. Him and his mom, when his mom passed away of cancer, sadly, but it was a modest house, but it was a house, with the backyard. They ended up moving into a trailer park in Fairdale.
Exactly. That's the type of thing I'm always talking about. That always happens with these eminent domain scenarios. And people made fun of that one house that stayed at, I know you probably, I don't know how much you spend time in Cincinnati, but they had this area near Norwood and Hyde Park that they tried to annex to build some mall or something. They eminent domain the land. It was all around Interstate 71. And there's this last house that kept holding out and holding out, and everybody would make fun of them. It's like, but you don't understand. They are not moving into a better situation 90% of the time. I bet those people finally did because they held out for so long. But and it's terrible. It's terrible what happened to you and his mother. And I don't know what to say. I think you're a bad person if you try and take away somebody's house. And I don't care what your justification is. If you can't find a way to make it work with open land, then you need to find another way to make it work.
Absolutely. Yep.
Anyway, that's all for the podcast this week. Thanks for dropping by, fam, and let's all thank Rick for coming on. This is the first time he's probably been on a podcast, so thank you, everybody.